Okay, our agenda is here. Today on the agenda is an issue that Nicholas brought up, which is issue 277. We'll start it off by discussing that, and then we have a number of reviews on the JSON-LD GitHub issues that are ready to be closed, and reviewing all the Last Call 2 and post-Last Call 2 RDF working group issues, and then talking a bit about candidate preparation, if we have the time. I'm scribing today. Is there any, are there any other changes to the agenda? Okay, let's go ahead and do issue 277, partial lists, I guess. There we go. And Nicholas, if you don't mind giving a quick introduction to this, that'd be great.
Sure. Well, I start off with what I saw when I implemented this recently. It basically just the observation that if you can serialize any sort of path to RDF nil using the first and rest where every node is well formed, I think that you should use the syntactic sugar form with the at list keyword, even if the property is RDF rest. And the only case where you would not serialize something having RDF rest as a property is if that list node is not well formed, i.e. it has an IRI, a type other than RDF list, or other properties than one RDF first and one RDF rest. Currently,
as well as everything before that.
Yeah, right. Right now, that's the case. True. So, right now, if you encounter such a node, and there is an RDF rest property pointing to that which is not well formed itself, then the subject of that property is not well formed, then we don't do anything about the rest. I don't really think that we should be that eager to unravel a list, because there could be places such as one example we've hit upon in the open annotation usage where we don't know if it would be sufficient, but one option that came up was to use to describe the first node with an IRI and then use first explicitly and rest, and in the rest value put the remainder of the list as a well-formed list. In general, though, I think the argument is that I don't really see a reason for the rest of the list to be treated as a non-list when it is a list, I'm not sure about turtle serializers in general, but at least the RDFlib turtle serializer that I've been using is doing the same thing as the proposed solution to 277, i.e. if it can, it will represent the path to an RDF nil as a well-formed list, even if the property happens to be an RDF rest on a non-well-formed node.
Can
I'm pretty sure that's what
conditions?
Mine does too.
I was going to just suggest that we list out the conditions under which this sort of data appears. Does anyone ever create the data intentionally so that that they would actually not want to have at list, or does this sort of situation only arise because some data is missing, or because they actually intentionally want to go with the open annotations use case? Can we list out when these things happen, and maybe just based on that list we can decide if it's the best thing to just wrap up as much of the list or the end part of the list as we can?
I didn't quite understand what you're asking there, Dave.
Well, if we decide, so currently, if something is not well formed, we don't use the Atlas keyword at all. That's my understanding. And I'm trying to figure out if that would actually be preferable behavior over wrapping everything up in Atlas, because I don't really know. But if we could list out the various cases under which we would encounter data where the list is not well formed, then we can decide, and that might help us make a quicker decision as to what should be done.
All unions aren't. They use lists, but they're not well formed.
Or
they can never be represented that way. No, because I believe they all have a type of OWL class.
I think that the members, the first member in the list are classes, but the paths, I've seen that in turtle notation.
It might not be. I'll look into it further, but I think that every element is type OWL class.
But it's possible that
serializer is generated anyway.
Right. If that's true, our algorithm, even if we did support this partial lists thing, wouldn't affect that in any way, because our algorithm would see that every element in that list is not well formed, so we wouldn't use that list. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So I think we can safely, regardless of whether or not that's true, I think we can safely ignore that case.
I think the main use case is where there are properties of the first of the list, right, of the first element in the list, where the list is a subject.
Right, and in that case, we would expect them to want to see the at list behavior, or the keyword. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so. So I can't imagine a reason where if you could use a list as the value of a RDF rest, that you wouldn't do that. In fact, that would also allow list of lists, because it could get around the problem of being able to represent them. Not being able to represent them recursively. Yeah, because you would just have a blank node as the argument, and then have the blank node spelled out with an RDF first and rest.
That might be awkward, but that's not any less awkward than what we currently do with lists of lists. So that would be fine with me.
Yeah, me too.
Marcus said he has an updated algorithm to address this. I'm curious if that addresses the potential for list of lists as well.
Yeah, it keeps the blank node reference in the outer list, and then the first node of that inner list is the blank node, and then RDF rest is again an at list array.
I think it's worth doing that even with added algorithmic complexity, and I do not see that this is any kind of a change that would require a change to the spec status. So it's just a detail of the specification itself. Now, other than the fact that I think we do have normative language that requires a list of list exception be generated. That's the only possible hiccup.
Yeah. I mean, we can basically mark this as a bug fix and then see if anyone disagrees. Because, I mean, it would be nice to be able to support lists of lists, and the only reason we weren't doing it before is it seemed too complicated, but if that's not the case anymore, then there's no reason to throw the error.
Yeah.
And then that bug fix means the side effect of the bug fix is that we don't have to throw another exception that we were throwing before.
And I don't think that anybody would want to have a list of list exception. I mean, if you don't use them, you don't care. And if you would use
right.
them, it would be very sad to have that exception.
Yep.
Also, currently there is an exception that everything remains in expanded form, so you wouldn't convert that to an at-list array at all. You get that exception just if you do compaction and you have an at-list and you compact it again to a list.
Right.
That's true. But we wouldn't have to. Well, right now the exception's only generated when during compaction. If the property that contains a list value has a list coercion on it, I still don't think we would need to generate that exception. In fact, you could get the sort of the recursive list behavior you wanted using the sugar by coercing RDF rest to path container list.
No, the problem why we need to raise an exception is if you have a property which is coerced to list and that property has already an array and then another array happens to be merged into that one, then an exception is raised because...
Yes, but if we could do this, you would need to because you would be able to generate a blank node value for the top level list and then spell out that value with RDF first and rest, and if RDF rest was coerced to list, then it could use an array as well, and then that would work recursively to any level.
Yeah, but then we would need to expand list to like link nodes already in expansion, not in 2R, yeah.
Do we need some more implementation experience before we make a decision on this?
Well, I think the update I'm going to commit later on doesn't have any side effects other than there might be parched lists which are values of RDF rest. Otherwise, you would just have blank nodes as values or IRIs as blank IRIs as value of RDF rest. So that's really the only difference from a high level perspective or from the outcome.
I think it's worthwhile, yeah, and I think that incorporating it to solve issue 277, it's likely that we then see where we are at with the lists of lists. So if something substantial there changes, we might need a separate vote on that later on, depending on how the incorporation of this change to the algorithm goes. Would that make sense?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. It sounds to me, though, that we're going to need to resolve this issue, both of them, pretty soon, because if we're going to go to candidate rec, we need this stuff sorted out before we do that.
Yes.
The other option is we put a big warning around it saying that lists of lists exceptions might go away, and then we can go into candidate rec in that state. So I guess it's not really going to hold us up to go into candidate rec, because we are looking for implementation experience on this particular change.
Yeah, it would be good with doing the change, including the warning, because we do suspect that everyone would like this direction, both the fix for 277 and plausibly supporting some kind of lists.
Okay, so what's the proposal here? Adopt an algorithmic change to convert a partial list from RDF to JSON-LD? Marcus, do you have a better wording?
No, I think that's fine.
Okay. Change to convert partial lists from RDF to. I'm only a plus two because I don't quite understand the details of the algorithmic changes that are being made.
Yeah, well, the details of the algorithm are extremely complex, and only Marcus, I think, can do it.
That's resolved. Anything else on issue 277? I guess we're just going to circle back around to this once someone, one or two of you have done an implementation of it. And then, Marcus, you're going to make sure to mark it as a feature at risk or a feature requiring feedback.
What exactly should I mark as feature at risk?
The list of lists exception and the algorithm itself, the higher level algorithm saying that there's a feature that converts partial lists to use a sugar notation in JSON-LD, and that feature may have side effects that if the side effects are too bad, we may revert the algorithm to a previous version of the algorithm after candidate rec. Basically to make it so that we can undo this change. App candidate rec without having to go through another one of them. Does that make sense, Marcus?
I'm not sure, to be honest. Because I still believe the list of lists exception has nothing to do with the change I'm going to make, because that's a completely separate issue from RDF conversion.
Right, but I guess what I'm trying to do is give us room to change that as well based on implementation experience. So there are two things that we're discussing. We should mark both of those things as features at risk or features that could change during candidate rec, so that if we've screwed up with the algorithm, that can be fixed. And if we have not screwed up with the algorithm, then it's perfectly fine. But we also want to remove list exceptions or some mechanism, then we can also do that after candidate rec. Was that any
question? Okay, what about if I just update the algorithms and you add the featured risk markers then? Would that be okay?
Yeah, that's fine. I just remind me to do it because I could easily.
Yeah, I will do.
I've got some on my plate.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah. I also think what Marcus is saying is there are other situations where lists of lists might come up that this is not fixed.
Okay. Yeah, and that's
I don't know. Okay. If we're moving on to the next subject, Vikash was saying in IRC that he wanted to mention some stuff on Google Summer of Code.
Okay. Anything else on this topic before we move on to Google Summer of Code stuff?
Just to note that given this change to the tests, I think that the RDF lib implementation will be very close to fully compliant.
Okay.
That's great.
Thanks.
Okay.
Hey.
Oh. Wait, so I'm not clear. Nicholas, are you working on the RDF lib implementation, or is it someone else?
No, I am.
Oh, okay. Fantastic. Yay.
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. After this, RDF lib. Okay, so next topic is Google Summer of Code update. Okay, there we go. Akash is going. Okay, so I guess Vikash is asking if we're passing him for the midterm evaluation. If someone could describe what I'm saying, that would be helpful.
Sure, I'll do it.
Vikash, on his proposal, had stated that he would be further along with the JSON-LD creator tool than he is right now for the midterm evaluation. I'm pretty happy with the work that Vikash has done. I feel that he could have probably gotten a little more done but it's unclear of why he didn't, if it was, you know, their technical issues or whatnot. A fail on the midterm evaluation basically means that he's out of the program completely, which means that he would just stop work and that would end of it. And I think that the work that he's done on the website has been certainly good enough to keep him in the program. He has given us a really nice new website. He's making progress on the creator tool. So I think we should pass him at this point. Are there any other thoughts on his status in the group? Specifically on whether he should get a pass or if we need to pass with a warning or a strong pass.
It would be nice if he could send some status update every week to the mailing list as we said a couple of weeks ago, because I at least have no idea of what he's doing most of the time.
Yeah. That's probably because he does a lot of discussion on IRC. Okay, so I guess we could ask him to start doing weekly updates. That's a part of his next evaluation, is that he should start doing weekly updates to the mailing list to let us know what progress he's made and what problems he's having, because some people are having a problem keeping up with what he's doing.
For my part, I haven't been able to be too involved because of probably time zone and vacation issues, but I would like to see Vikash achieve a higher level of proficiency in JSON-LD. I don't think he really understands the concepts given the amount of time he's been involved. He shows a pretty naive lack of understanding of really how the specification works. So I'd really like to see improvement there. I do like the changes to the website. I think it's been a net positive. And I think there's been some other discussion on the quality of code before sort of asking for updates so that we really have consistent things that are completely done rather than having to go back and forth. So I think there are some changes I'd like to see in the future, but I think you should continue on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. The other thing I've noticed with Vikash is that you tend to have to repeat yourself multiple times to him, or he tries to do the least possible as the first pass, and that's usually not good enough. So I don't know if that's a cultural thing, I don't know if it's a communication thing, but it requires a lot more of our time to kind of correct him and say that he needs to, you know, update it. Then again, you know, to balance that out, he is a student, and I think we forget how much you don't know when you're a student doing this kind of stuff for the first time. There's a pretty steep learning curve that he's up against. So I think there's a balance here. I think we expect more of him, but at the same time, I think he's having to tackle quite a bit. There's a cultural gap there. There's a time zone gap. There's a knowledge gap that are all kind of coming into it. I think we want to see improvement from Vikash along all aspects, but as far as the Google Summer of Code thing is concerned, he should continue. Is that the general consensus?
Sounds...
Yeah, for me.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I have not been keeping up in IRC on what Vikash has been saying. Has he said anything? Okay. All right. Then we're done with that. I think the other thing was that I think one of you said that you'd really want to see him writing more code since it is the Google Summer of Code. Dave Lane, I think that was you. But since it is the Google Summer of Code, if the only code he's been really writing is website HTML code, that's not that wasn't the expectation at the beginning of the project. So the rest of his time here should be spent writing, you know, at least a good chunk of JavaScript code to make the code part of the Google Summer of Code a bit more relevant. Okay, all right. Then we've got that audio log then in the minutes, so let's go ahead and move on. The next topic up is a review of the JSON-LD GitHub issues that are ready to be closed. I think we're done with most of the syntax document issues. I'm going to that link that I just pasted in IRC. Convert appendices into normal sections is done. Post last call to editorial comments by Robin Bergeon. I went through his blog post and the comments that he put in the responses to his blog post in detail and responded to him. There was really only one thing that we could do. The rest of it was more high level. General RDF is too complicated, linked data makes you think too much before the fact about data integration. There's very little that we can do with the spec right now, I think, to address some of his concerns. Some of his concerns that he raised are also they're very important. There are things that we were concerned about. So there's now a disagreement whether or not we've addressed those appropriately in JSON-LD or not. But they're pretty foundational things, and they're things that I don't think we can really change all that much. And, some of it also has to do with some folks feel that Robin's kind of misreading what the JSON-LD spec is trying to do. So anyway, I think I dealt with all of the last call issues that he has there. Briefly described JSON-LD's data model at the beginning of the spec. I couldn't get around to it, but rereading the spec, it is really difficult to read at this point because of all of the changes, all of the RDF integration. We start mentioning things way early in the spec now that shouldn't have been mentioned, things like blank nodes we mentioned like really early in the spec when we weren't doing that before. So we need to make another editorial pass through and clean it up, and part of that is probably going to be explaining the data model in a paragraph at the early part of the spec. So issue 263 has not been dealt with yet, but we will have to deal with it because the spec is pretty unreadable at this point from a newbie perspective. Issue 254, the government linked data working group. Feedback on JSON-LD. I believe that we are done with that issue. If anyone in the group feels that we're not done with the issue or any of the changes that we made based on the government linked data folks' feedback, if you feel that feedback is wrong, please let us know, because I think Marcus and I agree with the editorial changes, and we think that captures the consensus of the group, so we're going to propose to close the issue in the next 7 days. Or I forget if it's 7 days or 24 hours, which is in Marcus now?
Normally 24 hours.
Okay, so let's just propose to close it in 24 hours, and hopefully Marcus will review that. They're not very deep changes. They're just mostly editorial. Issue 245, Dave Lane, spec text to specify the context array feature. We have some ongoing discussion there with Marcus on what we should do. So we probably aren't ready to close that issue. And then David and Peter's JSON-LD review feedback, issue 222, I think we're ready to close that. So the only two things that we need to discuss are the if anyone feels strongly about the JSON-LD data model being described at the beginning of the spec and the editorial cleanup around that, and then this spec text for the context array feature. Any thoughts from the rest of the group on this? On either one of these two issues? what we should do or that kind of stuff?
Nothing regarding 263, I think. It seems like we're doing fine there. Or you. The 245 is tricky to some extent. I think that there is a case for what you describe, Manu, if we do not allow the data passed into as a context to contain the context keyword, then if you retrieve it from a document, you must pick it out using the context key, which seems like a fairly safe mechanism so that you wouldn't treat a document, instance document. You would detect that if you had a document, because you wouldn't find any value for the key. That sort of speaks to me, I think, but I can't say that I would be a hard plus one. It's still, I don't really know what people would expect. I do think that there is, it would be very nice syntactically to shave up a couple of bytes as in the example we took up in the issue. If you show this to people, for instance, if you want to access RDFAS JSON-LD or something like that, any kind of extra ritual syntactic thing that you would have to do to access your schema org data would sort of be problematic for political reasons, if nothing else, because people just are so wary about all this linked data craft. So I'd like to make succinctness a goal there.
So that would be an argument for allowing people to pass an instance document to the context argument?
Well, no, rather than an argument for not requiring the context key in the data, if you want to just explicitly add context data with JavaScript.
His argument is for the position you have been arguing, which is you must not have a context keyword.
Yes.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that? I know, Marcus, you're the main person there that's concerned. Well, I don't want to say that.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the playground has been working this way since the very beginning, and all the examples used the add context key. The other argument is that the same applies to the input document, so you either pass in the URL or you pass in the document you retrieved. And that's the same, that would make it symmetric to the context parameter, whereas if we disallow the add context key, that would be a special case, so to speak. So I'm not really too happy about that.
Greg, you're on
and,
the... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Marcus.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what we have been doing since the very beginning. The grammar was like that from the very beginning, I think, and I don't really see a reason to change that now.
Greg?
So I can see an argument for increasing flexibility here, because otherwise I think we're going to have some problems. So that would imply being able to pass an object in that has a context and extracting the context to process. An object that doesn't have a context, treating it as a context. An array, treating it as a context. A document pointing or a reference to a document that either has a context, as is done now, or is just a bare context itself. Part of me sort of rails against such to have it so variable, but I do think that it's unclear, and you could see people trying to do anything there and to not support things where it's sort of clear what the intention is is just going to ask for more problems. So that would be my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I don't feel very strongly about the whole not, must not, context must not. The only reason I said that is because I thought we did not allow that right now. But if we allow it right now and people haven't complained about it, then it's probably fine.
I'm pretty sure my implementation, the one on the playground, accepts either. It more or less does what Greg just suggested.
Yeah, that goes for the RDF lib stuff I've done too. So it seems the only thing that would speak against that is that if you accidentally pass in instance data that has no context in line, things will crop up as errors. Probably you'd detect that rather soon, and it's definitely a usage error. So the question is, how common would that be?
Yeah, I don't know. We don't know. So because there's not enough data for us to know out there right now. And trying to guess is difficult because we don't know if there's going to be very very much data out there that doesn't have a context at the top level. I would imagine that most of the data in JSON-LD would have a context at the top level. It's just a gut instinct, but there's no data to back that up. So then I guess the proposal is to just keep things as they are right now. I'm fine with retracting.
I'm not sure it's clear that the various options are allowable or that we have tests for all of the various different ways that you might do this, which we should.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we don't have any API tests.
Well, there is that.
Well, we do. We have. Right. So there's no API.
We don't look for all of the various. I think there's one case where we look for an exception. There is an expansion failure test. We don't have a way of specifying all of the various options, which I brought up at the beginning of the meeting, to test out the behavior of different options to the algorithms anyway. And then there's the whole promises type thing, which I'm not sure how to test that really.
Okay, so I guess the proposal then is to make it clear in the specification that objects provided to the context parameter can either be JSON-LD contexts or objects containing JSON-LD contexts. And I think we make the rest of the stuff clear, right? So is this proposal good for folks? Is that good enough to resolve issue 245?
Or arrays, or you know.
That's already in the spec. So that's made in the spec. The only thing that we're not clear about is whether or not an object can be a context or an object that contains a context.
Right. There is the problem of a context which contains a context, which would be an error that might be harder to detect if we allow that recursive check.
Yeah. So
maybe we just let that go.
Yeah, we can say something on it, or we could just raise an error on it.
Turn a blind eye.
Yeah.
It's a bit of the same thing as passing in an instance object without a context. If you pass in a malformed context that actually has a context key. It will only use the inner context, and, well, that's that.
Yep. Okay. All right. All right. And that's resolved. That's issue 245. The other issue is just editorial changes and trying to make the spec a bit less aggressive towards a newbie. Okay. And I think those are all the syntax issues, at least that we have in the issue track. API would be next. Marcus, would you be ready to talk about the API spec and where we are on all those issues?
Let me have a look. I think most of them are clear. There's one minor thing that we have been, or at least Greg and I have been discussing in a commit regarding what should happen with nodes that consist just of SID if you frame a document. Should they appear or shouldn't they appear? If you have a frame which just lists all the nodes, should such a node be in the output or not? That's one question. And the other one is that we should decide whether we support those plus JSON media types as well. Currently we don't.
Wait, what media types?
That's issue 260. Yeah, 261. That's a separate issue.
I haven't even seen this.
So the plus JSON media type issue is about, currently we have that HTTP link header which allows a publisher to link to a context without changing the document itself. Currently that mechanism is specified to work just for application/JSON. And I would like to generalize that to support all those plus JSON media types, because the plus JSON suffix has now been standardized, and for example activity streams will use a media type which I think is called application/stream+JSON, and I think it would really make sense to allow that HTTP or to use that HTTP link header in that case as well, otherwise it would be ignored. It's basically, the change would just be to rephrase that section over. There's a small explanation of what happens when you invoke the API, and that would need to be changed to say to support application/JSON or those /JSON media types instead of just application/JSON.
Sounds good to me.
It doesn't sound like it's that. It sounds good. I'm wondering, where does the, is this in the link header where you specify the media type, or is it just for the document?
If you look at the link I just stated in IRC, if you look, for example, at the compact method, then there are those 8 steps which describe how you, well, invoke the various algorithms. And somewhere in there, in step 5, it says, if the response has the content type, application/JSON, and an HTTP link header, do the following. And that step would need to be changed if it either has application/JSON or another media type having that plus JSON suffix.
Okay.
So I think we are just overly restrictive here. And that would kind of generalize it. I mean, it's still JSON, but there are different flavors of JSON, and I think we should support them all.
Yep. Yep. Anyone opposing?
I mean, saying the plus JSON suffix does not cover the application slash JSON case, or does it?
No.
Just does it cover the
plain case?
Because we have to cover that too.
Yeah, we would need to mention both.
Okay.
So we would say application slash JSON or any other media type having that plus JSON suffix as specified in RFC, whatever.
Okay.
So is this proposal good?
No, it's application JSON or anything with a plus JSON. It should handle application slash JSON too.
So
if you just replace the LD plus, then that will work.
Actually, LD, what do we do with LD plus JSON? That shouldn't be...
It falls under the last rule, any media type with a plus JSON.
But didn't we say that for JSON LD, the context has to be in the body and can't be in the link header? Do we want to change that?
I don't think I've ever really understood that strong restriction.
Yeah, it seems like an unnecessary restriction.
I'm fine with loosening that, yeah.
Okay.
We do have to be careful with things like that, because it might introduce recursion in the algorithms.
I think it's just a different initial context, isn't it?
The only argument against that could be that seeing the media type LD plus JSON can be interpreted as a signal to a consumer that you can save this immediately, and when you pick it up again, you have all the information you need to retrieve the context. Which wouldn't be true if we allowed it to be passed as a link header, even for LD plus JSON.
Right, and that's also related to what I was saying about recursion. When you see application slash LD plus JSON, that's sort of a terminator, so you know you don't have to follow any more link headers.
Right.
Okay, now I got what you mean. You mean for remote context, for example?
Right.
Okay. Okay, I'm either way. I don't really have a strong point on this. Could keep the restriction in there. And so the proposal can change to process all documents with the media type using the application JSON, any media type with the JSON suffix for the
It's an odd case where the Mato's echo is actually louder than his voice in my ears.
The beauty of audio systems. Okay, so how's that proposal?
Well, I think we can't say that because otherwise expanded JSON LD wouldn't be allowed anymore.
Oh,
right. Maybe we shouldn't. I don't know if we should prevent it. Just a note or a warning about recursion.
Well, don't we just need to say that you don't follow a link header if you encounter application LD plus JSON?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, you can safely ignore
it
a link
still allows header permission
if that's the media type.
Well, can you? I mean, if I went to foo plus JSON and I redirected and then that had a link header and you could just keep it doesn't really solve that problem entirely.
It doesn't solve the regression problem entirely, but if you do encounter LD plus JSON, you know you can stop, but that isn't a stopping. There may not be a stopping point because you might always get some other form. One thing that we proposed was saying that the HTTP link header can only use application LD plus JSON, but any other document can use whatever application type that they want. And this is related to another issue that's coming up. And if that were the case, it would be a hard stop, because whenever you use the link header, you have to use that media type. That's one way of dealing with the issue, but it might not be what we want to do.
I think that's probably reasonable.
The only issue with that is if there is a document that somebody's serving as application/JSON that does happen to have a context in it, but they're using like a legacy server or something, and they want to reference that same context with another legacy document, that makes it impossible for them to do that.
Yeah, that's too bad, I think. In practice, I would expect a lot of processors and consuming systems to see it's some kind of JSON. Could I somehow interpret it as JSON LD and try if that's what they're looking for? Although we might not want to specify it like that.
What about the last proposal that was placed in there? JSON LD API should process all documents labeled with media types, blah, 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 blah. Implementations must not follow an HTTP link header if you encounter an application LD plus JSON media type.
I think that's fine. That doesn't address everything else we're talking about, but I think that's fine.
Okay. Let's at least get a resolution out of that. Do we want to open another issue on this whole
It's
version?
In an upcoming issue.
Okay.
It's already an issue that's upcoming.
Okay. All right, that's resolved. Is that enough to resolve this issue, issue 261?
Yes, I think it is.
Okay, all right. Going back to the JSON-LD 1.0 API list. So, Marcus, what other ones here are ones that we need to...
The first one... The change we made last week about not including those, just those not references, as we call them, should that also affect framing, so that if you frame a document and you happen to encounter a note which doesn't have any properties because it's just an object of some statement, should that be included in the framed output, or shouldn't it?
I think they're going to have other algorithmic changes to certain things in order to support framing in the future, and I think we can postpone the decision because it'll fall under the same sort of issue.
Yeah, the only reason why I brought it up is because it's not in the node map at all anymore now.
Well, what I'm saying is the framing check might have to make modifications to the node map algorithm. I think it already has to make certain modifications to expansion to or one or the other to preserve things.
Yeah, to expansion, yeah.
Yeah, this might require sort of a framing option, though, to the algorithm, so that
yeah, that's essentially what
those nodes are discarded.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was saying. We already have to do that with some other algorithms, so it would just be the same thing if we decide that we have to keep do that. So I think that'll be expected behavior.
Okay, so that would mean that we wouldn't really need to discuss this.
Yeah, we don't need to discuss it now because it's the same sort of problem that will come up with several other things in framing where we'll have to specify special framing options to modify the algorithm in one way or another.
Okay, so that would mean that issue 279 we can close.
Well, we closed it after we updated the spec, right? Oh, no, we did that already. So, yeah, we could close it.
Yeah, I'm saying send an announcement out that we're closing issue 279.
Yeah.
Issue 277 just discussed, and that's, we can close that. It's resolved.
We've resolved part of 264. The discussion we were having about link headers is related to this.
Okay, so let's talk about that now, I guess.
So the main question here is, when you see when you use an HTTP link header with a context, should you have to specify that the media type there is application LD plus JSON? And if that's not specified, should it be ignored? The end result is you would only ever get one HTTP link header. You wouldn't get into a recursive state.
I think that would simplify it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of a use case where you need recursion, where you need to go to multiple different context documents, and I can't really see that.
The only one I can think of is in sort of legacy situations, where you have one document that is served with application/JSON that has a context, and you want to reuse that context in another document. That's really the only use case I can think of.
But you wouldn't have a legacy context.
Right.
I mean, no legacy document would have a context in it, would it?
Well, you might have a server that has some kind of issue with being able to serve application LD plus JSON, but it can serve JSON files.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that applies to just about everything.
I guess one question is whether we want to support that use case or not. I mean, it might be that this is one of those points where we just say, look, if you can't change the MIME type, you know, that the document's being served under, or you can't find another server to put it on, that where you can change the MIME type, then, sorry. There's no solution for you.
Well, something else I just thought of is if we just say you only follow one HTTP link header, we would have the same result. Plus, we could support this case. Because if what we're saying is if you encounter application LD plus JSON, you would never follow another link header by, you know, that's implicit. But if we just say you only ever follow one link header, then it doesn't matter what the media type is. It could say application/JSON, and it would still work.
But that might be dangerous because it changes the content of that document or the interpretation of that document, because in one case you do use that link header and in the other one you don't, right?
Oh, you mean when you actually go to fetch the thing that's in the link header itself?
Well, if you have a document which has a link header in a context in a link header and an inline context, and that inline context depends on the one in the link header, for example, because it reused some prefix or something, then you would run into problems if once the link header is used and the other time it isn't. So you would end up having different contexts then, yeah.
Are you talking about in the legacy case, where there's effectively two different link headers being used?
No, I'm talking about your proposal about just following one link header, for example.
But currently, I'm trying to figure out exactly what you're saying, because the proposal that was on the table before what I just suggested would have the same effect of only following one link header.
Yeah, but since the target of that link header would or must always be a JSON-LD document, and link headers are ignored for JSON-LD documents always, you wouldn't change the interpretation of such a document, whereas if you do interpret also documents which don't have that application LD media type, you sometimes use the link header, and if you use a document as a remote context, you don't use that link header anymore.
Right, and right. So, okay, so you are talking, that's what I was describing as the legacy case. Okay,
well, yeah.
I'm fine with restricting it to LD plus JSON. I think if that actually becomes a problem, implementations will become more loose and we'll deal with it. We'll have a note that says how to deal with it or something.
I think it's always much easier to lose something later than to restrict it later on. So I would prefer to keep it more restricted at the moment, and then we can always change it later on, but the other way would be difficult.
Right, I agree.
Okay, so the proposal is to require that application/LD+JSON has to be the target media type for a...
A remote context must be served as application LD plus JSON.
Okay.
Do we expect, say, schema.org, when they put their context up, to have the right MIME type?
Yeah, I think the only way they're going to deliver it is through content negotiation, so you're going to need to negotiate to get it.
Right.
Except the solution that they have right now can't do non-content negotiation.
No.
I know. I asked Dan for an update on that, but I don't know what's going on with it.
It's some of their infrastructure baffles me.
Yeah.
Okay. That is resolved.
There is another issue in here, Manu, that you particularly are concerned about, which is how do you, when you are getting remote contexts and you encounter redirects along the way, how do you interpret the URL? What becomes the base URL to resolve relative URLs against? Because you were concerned, particularly with the W3ID case, where people might be trying to use relative URLs against W3ID, which always redirects somewhere else, and that's not going to work with the current way that the spec is written. Of course, other use cases won't work if we switch it the other way, so we don't have a solution for that. So we're either going to have to pick or choose or come up with a solution.
How does that work for like CSS and XSLT? Does anyone have that fresh in mind?
Well, usually if you have a redirect, you always use the latest, the last URL. So if you have an HTML page and that gets redirected, you use the final URL for all the links.
Right, yeah.
Is that true, or does it depend on the HTTP response code? I don't know. Because not all redirectors.
I don't think so. That's just if you have a bookmark or something, then the HTTP status code says if you should update your bookmark or not, but not how you interpret relative URLs within such a document.
It makes
sense. We want the opposite thing to happen in the web payments case, because we have identifiers like https://nulli3id.org. I'm going to make something up. So and if we ended up using, if we ended up specifying something using relative IRIs, well, I guess which we don't do. We don't currently do it,
and one way to resolve this is to say if you're using W3ID, don't use relative IRIs.
Yeah.
Or ensure that the landing page is symmetrical in its path so that relative IRIs on the target would result the same as aliased.
I think that's a good solution. Basically, if you're using a link redirector, don't use relative IRIs. Be explicit about what the ID you want is.
Or set the base.
Yep. Exactly. Okay. I think that solves that problem. Because the other use cases we didn't necessarily want to break, and we want to kind of align with what everyone else does with the relative stuff. And if it's true that everyone else for the relative stuff ends up using the final URL as base URL, then that's exactly what we should do as well. If that's true. Does anyone know if that's true?
It certainly seems like the right thing to do. And I think it would be awkward to get a document back with relative URLs in it and not be using the URL from where the document came from.
Well, I mean, the other way wouldn't really work because everyone can create a redirector to your document and that would change your relative URL. So.
Yeah, but that might actually be what people want to do in the W3ID.org case.
Maybe in that use case, but not in the general use case like HTML, for example. That wouldn't make much sense.
Right. Yeah, and I think we should treat W3ID.org use case as a corner case. No, hardly anyone's going to do that, and the people that are doing that are probably going to have a pretty good idea about what they're doing with the link redirection stuff. They have a much deeper understanding about the way the web works than folks that just use redirects to other documents. At least that's the assumption I'm making.
I'm not entirely sure about the things I've seen with Perls, I can't really say yet.
Although the Perl is in the same, they're in the same bucket, right? They're in the same use case.
It
might be a general, if you're using a link redirection service, if the document that you're going to has relative URLs, they will be interpreted relative to the final location, not relative to the initial redirect location. And I think that's I can't think of a way that is not true or that should not be true. I mean, that really makes the most amount of sense. When you go to interpret a document on the web, you don't care how you got there. You just care that you are at a specific URL. You know the path of that URL, and then all links internal to the document that are relative are resolved against that final document URL.
Well, I think that's true for the majority of cases, but I think for the Perl and W3ID cases, you actually don't care what the final URL is, and a lot of people don't know what it
is. Right, so. But I'm saying in that case, those people should do something different.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so I think there's consensus here. So what's the proposal here? Relative URLs are always the base URL for a document is always the document location. That doesn't make any sense. Anyone have better, good wording for this?
I think it is the context URL or document URL in that remote document dictionary is always the final URL. So basically it means no change.
Okay, well if this is okay, well,
yeah, there's no change. I don't think we need to have a resolution.
Okay, all right. That's easier. Okay, anything else on issue 264? Okay, resolve issue 261
Can we actually close 264? Have we made the spec changes now?
We have to announce with 24 hours.
Well, right.
But yeah. Wait, hold on, which one, 264?
Yeah, the one we were just discussing.
No, I haven't updated the API stack yet. I will do that today and tomorrow.
Okay.
Like all the API stack updates.
Oh, and I guess we still have to make the comment about application LP plus JSON being required. Okay.
Issue 258, resolution's not reflected in the spec yet. There's only one. Which is like one
yeah,
three
right.
data types. Any info you need on that, Marcus, before you make the change?
Yes, because I think it's already explained and has already been explained before, so I wouldn't know what to add. So if you look at the data round-tripping, in the data round-tripping section, there is, well, the whole section is just about that. Just a second, we'll post the link. Here. So the second part, basically after example 13, talks just about all the cases where you might lose lexical representation or where the data type might change or other things. And And then it says to ensure lossless round tripping, the converting from RDF algorithm specifies that use native type flag, which controls whether RDF literals, etc., are converted. And if it sets to false, all literals remain in their original string representation. So I don't know, do we need to add anything or?
Reading currently. Yeah, I mean, I think specifically the next to last paragraph, we explain exactly how to ensure lossless round tripping. So I think we already, I agree with Marcus, we already state this in the spec.
Do we need a sentence before saying to ensure lossless? We can say, you might lose data if you do this. Would that be the warning that we needed to have? Is that what we wanted to do for this resolution?
Yeah, we could do that.
Well, that, isn't that the paragraph just before that paragraph? Saying that you might lose the lexical representation, the data type, whatever.
We don't, it's not very, we don't just come out and say it, but it is there. We don't say data loss could result because of the use of the use native type flag. But honestly, it's just, it's in there, and I think it's fairly clear. I don't think we need to do anything for that resolution. I think it's already in the spec. I mean, this section is, just goes into pretty good detail about the problems associated with it. Anyone else feel strongly one way or the other?
No. I did notice we have one too many commas there, though. When JSON numbers comma, we can get rid of that.
Yep. Correct. Okay. So let's just, that resolution struck because we already have the text in there. It goes into leading detail about, you know, what, about the issues with use native types. So I think that we're done with that issue, 258. Is that right?
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Web IDL dependency. Marcus, could you give us an update on this? Because it's a pretty long thread.
Well, there is no update, but what we need to do is we need to create that idle best harness, which we already did. We have an implementation that is JSON-based implementation, which passes all the automatically generated tests. We have nothing fancy in the API. The only thing is, the only question which is still open is whether we need to test promises or futures as well, or whether we just assume them as kind of given by the platform. So currently we don't test them, or we don't test their interfaces. We just test our interfaces.
Yeah, I don't think that's right, because we just say you get back a promise.
Yeah, right.
And then we just refer to that.
The
less we put into the document, the better. So right now, the only thing we have in the document is a word and a reference to the promise of respect. That's probably
right.
How we should keep it. And then, Dave, Longley, you put the IDL test thing in there to specify that we passed the IDL test harness, and that's good enough.
Yeah, and it's already been updated for the remote context changes, the remote document changes.
Okay.
So I think before going to PR, we need some expert which kind of declares our usage as being right, and that's it. And some time ago, Robin said... Sorry?
For Web IDL or the promise spec?
For Web IDL.
Okay. That would be Cameron or Robin.
Yeah. Robin said he could do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we can do that during the candidate direct. We will ask pass for that once we're in the candidate direct.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Does that mean? Let me going back to the list of issues. So that I think the web IDL dependency is resolved. There's nothing for us to do other than get expert advice on that. Test suite more obvious. Why is that even listed here? Greg, you raised this issue.
Well, it, yeah, it's pretty much done. I don't know why it's in the API, though.
It's a website thing, isn't it?
It's a website thing. We did lose the link to the test suite with the UI update, apparently, since you can't. There's no link to it. That's easily enough rectified. It needs to be styled. And I think if we add a purpose to all of the tests, it would help quite a bit. But otherwise, it is done.
Okay.
But that should not be on the API.
Okay, let me see why it's marked. Yeah, it's just so it should be under what JSON Elfo. It's not next. That's probably why we didn't
it's on the
better place.
Yeah, there was no other place. Yeah.
Okay, never mind. We'll keep it there then, because it is stuff that we probably should address during CR.
It could. I don't know how we want to. Basically, all it does is a little handlebars. It imports the manifests, and then it just iterates through them to print them out. Probably could have slightly better structure in order to give it some CSS hooks, and could use some style love. So
mm-hmm.
I can
okay.
spend some time on that. Oh, that's not unless there's someone that's more interested in the UI consistency.
That might be something for Vikash. We'll see. Although that might derail him from working on actual code, so. Maybe not. I could do it if I could find the time. So maybe during CR, if it becomes pressing to work on it, I'll find some time to do it. But anyway, this has nothing to do with taking the specs to CR, right?
No.
Okay. In real
well,
case,
it was probably a comment from the RDFWG about making the test more obvious, which is. So,
well, do we specify that? Isn't there like a link to the? I thought there was a link to the test suite in the.
Yeah, there used to be.
Okay. So it's missing.
I don't see one anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is a link in the API spec, at least.
Yeah, it's there.
Even in the header.
Yeah, there's a link in the API. That's right.
Oh, but not the syntax spec.
But
although that's not really.
It's not really syntax tests, so yeah, it doesn't really need to be there. It would should be on the website though.
That's true. Yep. Agreed. Okay. All right. So let's update that and specify that it should be on the website. Okay. All right. So those are all the syntax issues. I think we resolved all of them today. Is that correct? Sorry, API issues. Those are all the API issues. I believe we've...
The last was reorder test cases. I don't know if that's still relevant or not.
We can do that later. I don't think it's... We need to worry about that in the... You know, CR is where we kind of become concerned about things like that. Okay. All right, so there are two issues still that need to be resolved with the syntax document. I will try to get to them soon-ish. We are out of time for today. I'm going to be traveling next week and won't be able to make the call. So if someone else wants to run the call, that would be great. The thing that we need to go over is the RDF issues. We just need to go over the RDF issue tracker, RDF working group issue tracker, to make sure we've addressed all of those issues, and then just to make one final pass through to make sure that we've gotten everything, and then at that point we're ready to go to candidate rec. Is there anything else that folks can think of that we need to discuss for next week?
I won't make the call next week either. I'll be in a kayak.
Right.
A different type of travel.
Perhaps just skip next week's call.
Yeah, that'd be fine with me. Okay, so we'll skip next week's call and then meet the week after. And hopefully in the meantime, Marcus and I and Greg and maybe Dave can just make sure that the specs are in really good shape, so that once we meet again, we're going to make one final pass through the specs, and then we're ready to go to candidate rec. Sound good?
Yes,
sounds great.
Yep. All right. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks for the great call. Have fun in the kayak next week.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks, Paul.
You too. Enjoy your kayak.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Bye.